Hello, welcome back to the Drinking Liberally podcast, the show that combines good alcohol with some friendly political banter. I'm Kevin Wilson, and this week filling in the co-host seat is Dennis Skeet.
Hey, everybody.
Dennis, how you doing today?
Doing okay.
All right, it's a big day. We got a lot to talk about. So much so that we have a third seat to fill. And this week we have our man from the soundboard, Yogg. Welcome back, Yoggs.
Thank you, Kevin. Love being on the show.
Glad to have you here, man. There is so much to talk about. It is a historic day, whatever you think of it. It is historic. Jim Jordan wore a jacket on the floor of Congress.
Oh, wow.
So big day for America. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But before we do, we're going to talk about what we're drinking.
Oh, yeah.
This week, keeping up the winter theme, we have yet another Christmas-themed ale. This one is the Canine Winter Warmer from Flying Dog Brewery. This is a very interesting ale. It pours a lot like a glass of Coca-Cola.
Hmm.
Very much like last week. I think Jeff called last week's beer a lot like a glass of Coke. It looks like one. It has a very pretty foamy head when you first pour it out. The smell is not very strong, but it's got like a little bit of a malty smell to it, as you would with some of these beers, with hints of chocolate and coffee. But again, not super strong. Based on that, you would think it'd be a pretty sweet beer with the malt and the chocolate, but it's really not. It's got this very light, toasted, malty flavor to it. It's kind of strange to me. I'll be flat out.
In a good way?
No. I feel like every sip of this is a little uneven.
Interesting.
I feel in my mind, maybe my taste buds are all kinds of screwed up here, but I feel like it alternates between like that nice, sweet, slightly sweet, malty taste that I just mentioned, and then like rubbing alcohol.
Mm.
Where like the alcohol overwhelms everything else that's in there. And it might be because it's 7.4% alcohol by volume.
Ooh,
so it's a strong beer, for sure. But I don't know. It's not consistent. I don't know. Guys, give this a taste and let me know what you think.
Flying Dog sounds familiar as well. Has this been one of our previous beers? Or
You're putting me on the spot here. I don't know if we've had Flying Dog on the pod before. I've definitely drank a lot of their other beers, though.
That's what I meant, actually. Yeah. I didn't mean on the pod. I meant like out and about. Like,
you and I have for sure been out at bars that have this. And Raging Bitch is probably one of my favorite beers.
That's what I'm thinking of.
From Flying Dog. And actually ranks up there in favorite beers overall.
Yeah.
It's strange. Like this beer, it advertises itself as a beer with vanilla bean and cocoa. I did say it, you know, it's got hints of chocolate. I didn't taste a lot of the vanilla, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me either. Not really getting all that.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting taste.
It's not overly sweet, which is good.
Right, and I like that. I think this is something I could drink, but I don't get the vanilla, and I think I do get the rubbing alcohol. I think that's in there a little bit.
It definitely sneaks in, and that's off-putting to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like this has been a rough month for our beers. December has not been kind to us.
No, not great.
I've been seeking out holiday-themed beers because 'tis the season, despite our war on Christmas. But these are... we haven't had a lot of luck recently.
Yeah.
They've just had some kind of mediocre holiday brews. All of them ales. So maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm not a huge fan of ales anymore. My palate's clearly shifted, I guess.
Yeah, you're moving on.
Yeah. But looking at this can, so again, this is the Canine Winter Warmer out of Flying Dog Brewery. That's out of Maryland. The can itself, it's got this like spray paint-esque, graffiti-esque art style to it. Just kind of says Canine on it with a very stylized dog with a Santa Claus hat on it. I dig it. What do you guys think about this?
I think it's cool.
Is it appealing to you, or is this off-putting?
It is what it is.
I can see it going either way, because I literally just said I dig it. But as I turned, I'm like, there's a lot going on. It's kind of messy.
What is that thing there?
This is a dog.
That's a dog?
Yeah, it's a flying dog.
It's a dog with a Santa Claus hat on.
It's a little weird, but I don't have a problem with it. If the beer tasted better, I'd probably be like, it's fine, but...
You know, we've had such a history on this show of, like, actually having really good beers where we actually tried them out beforehand and knew that we're recommending something awesome.
Yeah.
And recently, we've been just kind of cracking them open right before we record and writing down some thoughts previously and then trying them live for our guests. And that it's been a lot more revealing, I think.
We should be getting some recommendations from our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a great place nearby that will order from around the country. So anyone that has good local brews that do distribute and can actually get those out there, they will go out of their way to order, even if it's just like a 12-pack, order beers from around the country. And they've been fantastic with it so far. We've tried to mix it up. Obviously, it's a lot easier to get beers from the Northeast where we're located. But they have pulled through for us before and gotten some good Midwestern beers and West Coast beers too. So if you have any recommendations at all, hit us up on social media. We'd love to see what you guys are all drinking and have one with you.
Cool.
You know, we just at the beginning about it being an historic day, but it truly is. By the time you're listening to this, impeachment day will have come and gone. And Donald Trump, our 45th president, will have been impeached on both articles that were levied against him. Those were obstruction of Congress and abuse of power. The votes fell pretty much on party lines. We had the notable dissenting people where Justin Amash, who is now a former Republican out of Michigan, that is now independent, voted in favor of both articles. We had a couple of Democrats vote against both articles, including one here from New Jersey, where we're recording. And then, of course, we had a present vote. So you can vote yay, nay, or present. So you're abstaining from voting. And real profiling courage out of Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat from Hawaii, voting present on both articles of impeachment. Fantastic work there, Tulsi. Way to keep up that that profile of being a Russian shill.
Dennis is
are you heartbroken?
Yeah, Dennis is
my former crush.
Yeah,
Dennis had a huge crush on Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, until I found out she was in the pocket of the Russians. But but no, Kevin Yoggs. Like, what do you gain by voting present?
Certainly not the Democratic nomination. She's not gaining that by voting present on both of these. I think she's trying to portray herself as the middle of the road candidate to get the Fox News voters because, you know, she does like to appear on Fox News a lot. I think this will get her another invitation.
Yeah. So she gets to say, I didn't vote to impeach Trump.
That's it.
Gets to make that statement. I guess that's really
only win I can see in her book.
She also gets to say I didn't vote against it.
Like, right? It's a slimy way of trying to have it both ways.
Yeah.
By voting present rather than taking a hard stance, yes or no. But in this case, in such a divided house, not taking a stance is taking a stance.
Right. Right.
When you're aligned with one political party, the Democrats,
and running in their primary to be the president.
Right. If she was not running for the Democratic nomination, you could say, okay, well, maybe she's doing this on principle.
Right.
But if she's going to portray herself as a Democrat through and through and then vote present, then you can only see that as her siding with Republicans. Right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong on this, Yoggs?
I also think that one of her big staples to this point has been attention, right? And getting it. Because honestly, the way she was polling and all that, the way she gets press and the way she gets attention is by pulling stunts, if you will, right?
Yeah.
And having something break her way. Like someone mentions her when Hillary Clinton did, whatever. I think present gets you attention. It's something we're talking about. Or if she voted no right now, we'd be like, all right, she voted no. If she voted yes, it would be a vote. Present makes her stick out, and it's one of those things, like you guys said, she gets to straddle the line and say, I didn't vote no, but also it gives her attention. It's like something that makes her stand out.
Yeah, that's true.
Yogs, I think that you hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly what it is, because no one is going to remember the two Democrats that voted nay on Article 1 and the three that voted nay on Article 2. They will remember that one person voted present.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Yeah, that's got to be it. I can't think of a better reasoning.
Yeah, I agree. It's perfect.
You win this round, Yogs.
Thank you.
All I will say is, Tulsi, I will not be going surfing with you. I'm going to have to cancel that date.
I know you guys had that planned, and you've been looking forward to it.
Really looking forward to it. Haven't been to Hawaii yet. Was hoping to get out there, get on a surfboard for the first time. She was going to teach me, but I'm going to pass.
It's tough. Sometimes, you know, politics get in the way of love. Go down to Van Drew's district and surf off the Atlantic City coastline. So, yeah, it's been a very interesting day. We're actually recording this right after the second vote happened. So this is all fresh in our minds. We watched this all live the last few hours. This whole day was a very interesting sideshow. So members of Congress got to go and present themselves for 30 seconds apiece. Both sides, Democrats, Republicans, say their piece, whether they're voting for or against articles of impeachment, give their reasoning, or, you know, reserve those 30 seconds and give them to someone else, which happened a lot. But we totaled over 8 hours of congressional speechifying. It was a long, long day, and we heard some batshit crazy things today. Some of my favorites I do want to point out before we start poking fun at things we heard. Some of the craziest parts. We heard GOP members claim that the impeachment process was an injustice on par with things like the Salem witch trials, Pearl Harbor, that was a weird one, and the crucifixion of Jesus Christ.
Wow. They went there.
Yeah. I wish I was exaggerating that last one. I'm not an overly religious person myself, but even this struck me as like kind of a blasphemy here to hear Representative Loudermilk of Georgia, where he equates what's currently going on in this impeachment inquiry and, you know, subsequent vote to the trial of Jesus Christ. And this is a direct quote from him where he says, quote, "During that sham trial, Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than Democrats have afforded to this president," end quote. Let that simmer for a little bit in your mind.
That's, I have to say that I think that can be like absolutely proven false, because one of those people, as we're told, ended up nailed to a piece of wood.
I don't think Donald Trump's getting nailed to a piece of wood at the end of this.
And the other one's still going to be the president of the United States.
Yeah.
So I find it really hard to believe that Trump really had it that bad.
I don't think it's that bad either for Donald Trump. And shame on this guy, Representative Loudermilk from Georgia, to even try to equate those two things.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Whether you're religious or not, that is an obscene comparison to make. And just absolutely out of this world crazy. And it speaks to kind of, we've talked about cult of personality ad nauseum on this podcast, but speaks to just how far in the pocket a lot of these GOP members are for Donald Trump.
Oh, they're far in.
He is a Christ figure to them now. And if that doesn't worry you, it should. Because they will do anything to protect him at this point. That's not how politics should be. Even during the Nixon impeachment, where Republicans were very much lined up in his favor, a lot of them came out and were like, oh, after the evidence came out, and said, oh, well, that changes things. This guy isn't who I thought he was. We're not seeing that here, and that's very scary.
Yeah, no, they're willing to lie at this point. They're actually implementing a lot of the things that he has done to get by. He makes himself a victim when he's not a victim at all. That's one of his biggest crutches to kind of hang on. And now we've had Republicans slowly dip their toe in the water, and now they're fully in the pool at this point because if there's a lie, before a lot of times you could tell the first couple of years, they tried not to repeat a lot of his lies and his talking points. Now, the ones that are left behind now, they'll repeat the lie. So the lie in this case is about how he's been treated unfairly. Like, how so? This House process has been very open. It's been done according to the rules of the House. Today, I saw even at the end, at the very last speech that Doug Collins, the Republican from Georgia there, made, was talking about the unfairness and rules that were broken in the House. It's not true. None of it's true.
No.
But the thing is, their ability to say things like you just brought up and have an outrageous take on it doesn't matter anymore. It just is like, whatever sticks, just say it.
Yeah, throw everything at the wall. Like, it's crazy the stuff they're saying. They used to say how this was all be done in secret, right?
Yeah.
And then Democrats came out and said, well, no, in every single one of these hearings that are not open to the public, there have been Republicans there able to ask questions and have the same rights as the Democrats. But the Republicans are coming out saying it's been in secret. We can't do this. We can't do that. And like, it's just not true. And but it doesn't matter anymore. Like, truth is just, they just make up whatever they want. And it's terrifying. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that argument because I, while watching all of this, so you all didn't have to, wrote down notes about some of the arguments we continually heard from the GOP. And one of them was about this being a secret proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard that a lot during the initial weeks of this impeachment inquiry, which, again, to Dennis's point there, ignores the fact that Republicans sit on the Intelligence Committee and we're free to ask questions of these people. And we know that because they leaked a lot of information from it. So these were not secret at all. And if you still don't believe me, just look to the public hearings that we had immediately thereafter with the exact same witnesses. Now, this is an important distinction to make because it ties into another argument that the GOP make. You're going to hear a lot from Donald Trump, I'm sure. I would bet money on this over the coming weeks that he is not being allowed his due process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He made that argument during the House inquiry. And I'm going to tell you why that's a bullshit argument to be making. The House inquiry is more akin to a grand jury investigation, right? This goes on behind the scenes. And it goes on in secret because you're interviewing witnesses and you don't want your witnesses that have potentially committed crimes or been witness to crimes to collaborate with each other and get their stories straight, you know?
Yep.
You want to see what the truth is. So you don't give them an opportunity to be together. Jeff and I, on a previous podcast, made the argument that if two of us get arrested for bank robbery, they don't put us in the same room afterwards for us to get our story straight.
Right.
You question both of us separately. That is what the initial process of the House inquiry was. It is akin to a grand jury investigation. Due process, the ability to sit, call witnesses, testify, are things that happen in a trial, which is the Senate's purview. So after the House decides on impeachment, which they did yesterday, by the time you listen to this, it goes to the Senate then for a actual trial, over which a judge, in this case, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, presides over. Evidence is presented. Witnesses can be called. The president himself could testify,
mm-hmm.
or the White House counsel could testify on his behalf, and he could have his due process there.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump has no interest in actually doing any of that. It's all for show. He could have testified in the House proceedings if he wanted to. He could have said, I will be my own witness.
Right.
Tell you exactly what happened. He has firsthand knowledge. And for Republicans that keep you arguing about hearsay arguments, yeah, Donald Trump's got firsthand knowledge, so why not ask him? Why not ask Mick Mulvaney, who has firsthand knowledge of all of these conversations and could clear Donald Trump's name immediately?
Yeah.
If he just testified saying, you know, I was in on that same call that the whistleblower and Sondland and everyone else said was inappropriate, but I didn't see anything inappropriate with it. Wouldn't that help the president's credibility?
Yeah.
They can do that. And that's part of due process. But you will not see that because the president has something to hide. That's what this all boils down to. He could clear his name immediately. We know there are multiple people that sat in on all of these phone calls that are at the crux of this impeachment inquiry with the Ukraine. But he will not allow any of them to testify. And that is why he is also guilty of Article 2, obstruction of Congress. Because he could easily allow these people to testify if he just said the word.
Yeah.
And if it was going to clear his name, you ask yourself, well, why won't he let them talk?
And a lot of them could just talk on their own. They don't need his permission. Like, Mick Mulvaney can show up.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it could be a problem. Like, later on, there might be some, you know, oil executive privilege, this and that. But not, I mean, no one stopped some of these other people that work in the administration from...
An aide to Mike Pence, our vice president, came forward and testified that something was wrong here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mick Mulvaney could do the same thing. John Bolton, a former member... who you would imagine is not protected by executive privilege at all at this point, could come back and testify. But none of them are.
Yeah. Sondland came out and testified and then had to rush out at the end to go back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He still works for our government.
Yeah.
A hand-picked appointee, an ambassador, by the Trump administration, came out and his opening statement said there was a quid pro quo.
Right.
Well, that's obvious now at this point. But I want to touch on one thing you said because it's very important. The crime here is not even being debated. You're not getting any of this like, well, what did he actually do it? It's either the ones that are so extreme, they're out lying, say there was nothing wrong and not ignoring facts, ignoring evidence.
Right.
The other ones are just not even getting into the facts of what happened.
Right.
Yeah.
And like you said, this is... an investigation, witnesses were called. They had plenty of opportunity to question these witnesses. They did. They used it as a soapbox to, you know, perpetrate, you know, lies and distract with this other Ukrainian stuff that's going on and this and that, instead of getting into the bottom line of what's going on. And to this day, still, many Republicans will not answer the simple question of, you know, when reporters have been going up to individual senators or even some congressmen and asking, do you think it was wrong to ask Ukraine for help in investigating political rivals? None of them will answer that question. They won't say no, it was. They just won't. They'll just walk away. They've ducked that for so long.
Yeah. So you got to ask yourself why. Why they keep ducking that question.
Because they're hiding something. You know, not one document's been turned over, by the way, from the Trump administration.
Right. Nothing. Again, more evidence of obstruction. So... It's crazy. Those are just a couple of the ridiculous arguments we've seen in the last couple of weeks. And then today really came to a head since everyone got to have their say for at least 30 seconds, if not more. And another one that I want to touch on is the GOP kept making a argument earlier that impeachment nullifies the 2016 election. And in essence, nullifies the votes of 63 million people in America. All right? And I could see where that mindset comes from. I could see how it's an appealing argument. But it forgets the flip side of that. It forgets three things. Number one, it does not nullify the 2016 election because if Donald Trump is impeached, Mike Pence becomes president.
Right.
Republicans remain in control. Donald Trump chose Mike Pence as his VP for a reason, I assume. They assume he is a competent leader that could take Donald Trump's position.
It's like the only job of a VP.
Yeah,
calling Pence a
competent leader. Yeah, I can't get over it that I just said that.
It's a little tough, but...
I'll leave it in. Anyway... So, Pence would become president.
Yeah.
Right? Not Hillary Clinton.
Nope.
So it's not like it undoes the election and hands the election over to Hillary Clinton where she rises to power and takes over.
Right. It's not a coup. Can't call something a coup when the VP of the same party becomes president.
Yeah. Well, then why is impeachment in the Constitution then? Because then any impeachment's reversal of an election, correct?
Right. So if impeachment's a coup, then that means we put coups in the Constitution.
That means our founders and the Constitution,
who everyone today so reveres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That's very the logical point. Argument. Thank you. So number two reason this is BS. Yeah, you're making the argument that 63 million people's votes would be nullified. The flip side of that is that 65 million people, close to 66, voted for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So the will of the people already was shown and hasn't been satisfied.
Yeah, they like to leave that out a lot.
They do like to leave that out. The final part I want to talk about with this bullshit argument about that it nullifies the 2016 election. To add on to that, they also like to say that, you know, there's an election in 2020. Let the voters decide. I'd like to present the argument that in 2018, we let the voters decide. We were 2 years into the Donald Trump presidency, and 2018 was a referendum on his performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats won in a landslide, a blue wave, if you will. So should those representatives that just got voted in not feel like they have a mandate to hold Trump accountable? Because it sure as shit sounds like people were fed up with him and voted for Democrats because they did not want to vote for the GOP. So to say that this nullifies the will of the people is complete, utter bullshit and is just more stonewalling by Republicans at this point.
Yeah, and that was always one of the laziest takes that they've thrown out there. It's garbage. Let the voters decide is garbage. You can't leave someone in that committed a crime to now be free to commit more crimes for another 7, 8, 9 months.
Thank you.
For as long as he's around, just because, well, there's an election. First of all, you know, it's not like there's an election next week. It's November of 2020. Yeah. We haven't even hit January 1st yet. So we're supposed to say, well, let's just leave. That's a full calendar year almost.
Yep.
Basically 11 months. So now we have to sit here and allow someone who already attempted to bribe another country to investigate a U.S. citizen. We're going to have that person still around to do the same thing again to somewhere else and right. not feel any consequences. That's absurd.
Makes no sense.
And it's not just the potential bribery of the Ukraine. There's a pattern here. Again, like he asked Russia to hack Hillary Clinton's emails. We have proof now that Russia started doing it that exact 24-hour period.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours of him publicly asking for it, they started doing it. He went in front of a helicopter in one of his impromptu, quote-unquote, press conferences and asked China to investigate political rivals as well, live, on TV.
Yep.
And Republicans seem to forget all of these instances. That leads to such a dramatic pattern of abuse of power.
Yeah. And these countries are known for their fairness and their openness.
Yeah, because if I'm going to trust any country, it's going to be China, Russia, and the Ukraine.
Yeah, of course. They're very, very, very forthright, these countries, right? Yeah. So, like, they're perfectly... we're not worried about corruption, right? Because they're okay.
Wait. But you say that because they're okay, which is why Donald Trump asked the Ukraine to investigate the Bidens, right? Because they're so okay.
Exactly.
Right.
They are okay.
But on the flip side, I thought the Ukraine was one of the most corrupt countries listed on the White House's list of the most corrupt countries.
So there's another corrupt country, Turkey, I believe, that we deal with. But
so it seems like he really enjoys talking with corrupt countries while at the same time alienating a lot of our actual allies.
Right. Because he's focused on corruption, you see. But he's focused on...
Okay, yeah. Play devil's advocate here for me.
He's focused on corruption, you see. But he's focused on a certain corruption. But another corruption we need to focus on at another time is, I guess, the
none of that makes sense to me.
Exactly.
It's nuts.
So if the Ukraine is so corrupt, they would be the best people to investigate corruption of a U.S. citizen then, rather than like the FBI.
Correct. No, they're the because it's going to be fairness. You know, if some if another foreign country is going to investigate an American, especially a country that is on the corruption list or that has leaders that are basically, you know, in power for life, autocrats, they're going to do a nice job of being thorough and being fair.
I'm sure they would.
Yeah. Of course they would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Because, and what's funny is this is what's the craziest part. They've quote unquote won an investigation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you talk to any Republican Donald Trump, Hunter Biden is already guilty. He's right. already guilty of accepting a job that was given to him for other reasons. So so on one hand, we need an investigation, but
they've already made up their mind.
But they've made up their mind. So what do we need now?
And there's also the evidence of them saying that they don't need to actually do the investigation. They just need to announce the investigation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's on record.
They clearly...
Yeah. That's probably the most damning evidence, one of the most damning pieces of evidence, and no Republican has been able to say anything about it. Not one. Yeah.
Dennis, that hits at something important there, where the optics of opening an investigation into the Bidens was more important to Donald Trump than actually pursuing an investigation.
Yeah.
And they're on record admitting that right now. So let's talk a little bit more about optics in general, in particular the optics of impeachment. Is impeachment good for the Democrats in the long run? Your opinion.
I don't know if it helps them. I think it doesn't hurt them.
Okay.
I don't know if they gain much by impeaching, but I think if they didn't impeach, they would definitely lose. Because they would have nothing to back up themselves against the argument that if Trump isn't impeached, then what are you complaining about? You know, like, how are you saying he's such a terrible person, but you never impeached him, so everything he must have been fine. So, you know, I guess to some extent it kind of like helps their base that they impeached him. But I really find it hard to believe that someone that was thinking about voting for a Democrat is going to not vote because he was impeached in the House. I mean, maybe there's a handful, but I can't see there's this massive amount of people they're going to switch because of that.
Yogg, same question.
Yeah, and I kind of agree with a lot of what Dennis just said. I don't think that it's going to be an issue in November of next year. Think about it. Like, just kind of you'd brought up before about the Clinton impeachment. As far as being a political topic in an election. I think Dennis made a great point, though. I think the base needed to know that the Democratic Party has a spine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it needs to stand for... It can't all be about politics. It can't all be about, you know, what's gonna happen if we don't do this, and what about this, and what about that? Because in trying to woo these... few voters who honestly, like Dennis just said, aren't going to vote because of impeachment, whether they like the Democrat or not, you're going to lose a core voter who honestly believes that this president is corrupt, this president committed a crime, and violated the oath of office. And if we just sat back with a leadership that had the power to investigate this, found wrongdoing, and then just decided not to do it, I think it would have done way more harm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. That nails my thoughts on it. I'm going to throw in, we're going to squeeze our fake news of the week into this then. Because there are takes out there right now that say, you know, impeachment's bad for the party that's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And history doesn't show that. So that's where our fake news is going to play. So if we look back to the most recent one, the Bill Clinton impeachment in the 90s, Republicans controlled the House and the Senate. They voted to impeach Bill Clinton, after which his popularity actually rose to the 70s, which is an insanely high percent.
Yeah.
Republicans voted to impeach Bill Clinton along party lines, mostly. A few defections from the Democrats. And then really paid a heavy, heavy price in 2000... when they lost a grand total of 2 seats in the House. And then you might remember won the presidency when George W. Bush took over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the argument that this is just bad for the party that's running it is complete bullshit. We don't have enough data, first of all.
Right. It's only happened
three times.
Yeah. I mean, we've had four presidents face serious impeachment.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon resigned before those articles could be voted against him. But for all intents and purposes, you could believe that they would have voted against him.
Yeah.
But only three have been officially impeached.
And one thing that's really important, because you just brought it up, is in talking about the Clinton thing, everyone wants to compare the two because it's the most modern, you know, situation, right?
Makes sense, yeah.
Recency bias. Andrew Jackson was, you know...
Andrew Johnson,
sorry, my apologies, was so long ago. The thing with the Clinton impeachment was, it was one of those things that people had decided was something based on he just had an affair and he didn't. Because the thing is, that investigation started about with Whitewater, right?
Yeah.
And they wanted to find something. And the best they could do was get him on perjury because he actually testified. Trump never testified.
Yep.
They got him on a crime that Donald Trump won't even dare put himself in a position
to you imagine him being in front of federal prosecutors like that? Or just congressmen?
Right. So Bill Clinton was never impeached for what they sought out to impeach him on.
Right.
And I think that's the wild thing. Trump is actually being impeached on what he was sought to be impeached about.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
It's about he did this. They did an investigation. They got witnesses. There was corroboration. And now it's very evident that this happened. There's an impeachment.
That's a very important distinction to make, I think. Yeah. And I hate to do the whataboutism. Like, it's always a shitty argument to be making. But Republicans keep making this argument that Clinton should have been impeached. And to Yogg's point, for those of you not familiar, like, Whitewater is essentially a real estate issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it boiled down to. It's a lot more involved than that. We don't have all day to get into it. But it was like a corrupt real estate deal that they were investigating.
Yeah.
Or they said it was corrupt. It leads to the uncovering of Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky. And then Bill Clinton lied about the affair with Monica Lewinsky. That's what he was impeached over.
Yeah.
No evidence was ever turned over to prove that any of his real estate dealings were corrupt as the initial investigation intended. So the American public didn't really give a shit.
No. They thought it was about sex. They were like, we're impeaching him because he had, you know, sexual relations in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And again, that is another thing about the Republican thing, was about the honor of the office. Because the whole point was, it was in the Oval Office. What a disgrace. Mm-hmm. And now you look at this president who has basically no honor at all, whatsoever. Which is the whole irony of the whole thing. And who's probably had multiple affairs, you know, in his life. And he would
probably, we know he has. Yeah,
exactly.
Another thing he could be impeached on is a campaign finance violation because he cheated on his wife with a porn star and then paid her to be silent.
Yes.
So it's not probably.
Yeah.
We know he's had affairs.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's a president that will deny everything forever, right?
Yep.
So can you imagine that he got caught having an affair in the White House? Do you think he's going to admit it and not perjure himself? He won't even deny anything. He says, of course he would have.
He's incapable, I believe, at a fundamental level of self-reflection and honesty and growth at this point.
Yeah. And empathy.
So, like, on that, yeah, and empathy is a big one that's missing from his personality traits there. Dennis, you and I were talking about this before we got on mic. If Donald Trump possessed any of those qualities we just mentioned, empathy or self-reflection, do you think he could have avoided all of this trouble of impeachment?
I think so. I'm really interested to hearing what Yogs thinks, but if we start going down this road and at some point Trump says, okay, look, I reached out, here's the transcript or the memorandum or whatever it is. I asked for this. I wanted to fight against corruption, but I also knew that you know, this could help me. And I shouldn't have done it. I'm, you know, the same thing they used to say all the time when he first got elected, right? It was like, well, I'm not a politician. I don't know the rules. I don't, I'm not good at this. I'm off the cuff. I'm not a Washington insider, all that kind of crap. And just sold that to the American people as, I shouldn't have done this. It was a mistake. And, but it's not impeachable because I wasn't doing it with malice intent. I was just trying to, you know, I saw this thing and I, you know, whatever, right? And he does that. And if the Republicans then say, look, he did something wrong. He shouldn't have done it, but he didn't break a law. He admitted it, whatever. He should not be impeached. I think that the Democrats would have, it'd be a lot harder for them to take up all this oxygen with impeachment for this long and have to do this. I think it would be a very different situation. And I think the thing that makes this terrifying and the reason why he has to be impeached is that he's saying he did nothing wrong. The entire Republican Party is agreeing that he did nothing wrong, which means that if he's not impeached, that means we're basically saying what he's doing is right. And for every president after this, what he's done is completely legit. You know, it's all fair game.
As well said. I don't know if I actually have anything to add to that. Yogs?
I know Bill Clinton apologized, and that went a long way for his situation at the time. I think the thing is, I agree with all of that. The problem is Donald Trump operates in a way where there's almost no leeway for making an excuse like that. There's so much evidence that he committed like a crime, mm-hmm. and wanted that the way he operates is almost like it's hard to be like, play the ignorance card. I'm newbie. This and like it's so straightforward. He deals in these very, very different rules that he thinks apply to him as he was like a businessman. Like, I can ask for this, I can pressure this, I can do this, and that's just that. And I think the reason he never does that is I think he also knows, well, I can't. Like, if he said, you know what, I did this, and the first thing would be like, well, yeah, well, now you've committed a crime. You've kind of now admitted that you basically bribed Ukraine. And you can apologize for it, and now you're just basically hoping that the general public thinks, okay, that wasn't a big deal. Well, guess what? That may be all well and true, but you committed a crime.
See, I don't know. So I don't know. I think that goes a long way with the general public, though. I think if he came out and he played the new guy card and showed an iota of humility, I think that plays very well with the general populace, and I think it makes impeachment untenable for a lot of Democrats, especially ones in swing districts. Because if he paints himself as like, hey, I just didn't know. Like, yeah, it came off that way. I won't do it again. He doesn't have to apologize necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but give the appearance that he is apologizing and shows some recompense for this. I think a lot of Americans, even Democrats, say, all right, well, that shows some character growth, so we'll give him a second chance.
Yeah, I think the Democrats could still go for impeachment. I just think the public would, like, I don't think the numbers would be the same.
I think politically it'd be bad for Democrats to do it.
Right, I think it'd be, there'd be more people that are saying, this isn't necessary, right? Like, he's not going to do it again. If he does it again, he's already admitted, he knows he did something, like, he can't do this. If he does it again, well, now we got him.
Yeah.
But if he said he's not doing it and, you know, this was a mistake or whatever the excuse is, I think a lot of people just say like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, you shouldn't do this. But like the other million things he's done that he shouldn't do. Like, it's a pattern. But I do agree with Yogs in the sense that his whole strategy for everything is, I did nothing wrong.
Right.
And like, it may not necessarily work to have that strategy for all this time and then all of a sudden switch and just say, oh, I'm sorry. Like, so maybe that wouldn't work. But so that I'm not sure about. Like, if he just pivoted now, it may seem totally disingenuous and like not work. But if But if those just like, if this was the first thing that he ever did that was wrong and he kind of like apologized for it, then I'm sure a lot of people would probably just give him a break.
I think it would work because the media has given him opportunity after opportunity.
True.
To become quote unquote presidential.
Yeah, the pivot.
How often have we heard them say like, this is when Donald Trump became president.
Yeah.
Like, this is the moment that he became president. They want him to succeed. They've had so many opportunities and he fails every test, unfortunately. And that pains me to say because I'm frankly embarrassed that our president can't pass these basic tests of human decency. That seems like the bar is like below the ground and just existing on this earth puts you above it. But unfortunately, it's not the case with this guy.
Yeah.
I want him to be a decent human being. I want him to do things that are right and that benefit Americans, not just who he sees are as Americans, but everyone that lives on this soil, to protect their rights, make sure they don't go bankrupt, make sure they have health care. The things that, you know, he actually campaigned on, but has since forgotten. Because all he's concerned about is his own ass.
Yep.
And I cannot accept that. It's just, it's all about him. And it's disgusting to me. I the sooner this guy's out of office, the better. And whether that's through a Senate impeachment trial, which we all know how that's going to end up with the GOP controlling it, or 2020, bring it on.
Yeah. He's got to go.
Actually, speaking of the Senate trial, I actually learned a little something. The way it works, and I forgot about this part, is it doesn't go straight to the Senate. Obviously, the House has to hand it over to the Senate, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's one thing that has to happen before that, too. There has to be a conference that's going to go over the rules.
Right.
And that's very, very important. Because
in the Senate, you mean?
No. This is a House and Senate conference. It's going to be... Huh. It's
yep.
They get together. Kind of like what they do on reconciliation bills. Like if there's a bill, if the House passes a bill and the Senate passes a bill, they get a conference together to go over the overlaps and get an agreement on what...
Find a middle ground.
Find a middle ground. Find the overall bill that then everyone will vote on and that'll be that.
Okay.
So they're going to do that to come up with rules. And I don't know how contentious that can be and who's going to agree with that. And that might be something that bears watching. But then also the idea of if the House will even hand this over to the Senate, which is, you know, something that's come up and, you know, and all that. But that's another thing that has to be kind of looked at, the conference aspect of it.
Let's talk about what you just brought up there. The fact that the House may or may not hand this impeachment over to the Senate. So that's a very real possibility. When the House impeaches a president, they then have to send it. There's a formal process. Send the process over to the Senate to hold the trial. In theory, the House of Representatives could say, yes, we've impeached him here, but we're never going to send those articles of impeachment to the Senate for the trial and officially open the trial. The House controls that process.
Actually, I have some breaking news here because I guess Pelosi just spoke to the press and she said she's not naming House managers or transmitting the articles of impeachment to the Senate until she knows, quote, what the arena will be, unquote, in the Senate trial.
That's a very telling statement there. And thank you for looking that up. That's very timely.
Thank you.
I'm
glad to hear that personally.
I'm glad to hear it too, because I think it benefits Democrats and this process in the long run. Yeah. Holding this from the Senate is good for a few reasons. We already know the Senate has committed to just acquitting Donald Trump immediately.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard that from Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, who called himself a quote unquote not an impartial juror.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you take an oath that before the whole thing starts, you have to take an oath saying that you are an impartial juror.
Right.
So that's funny.
Yeah. So he's already broken that oath before the trial even starts. Lindsey Graham is committed to ending this as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a number of senators, GOP senators, that have no interest in conducting a fair trial. They've already made up their minds. They know how they're going to vote. And those are not people you want on the jury. So do Democrats even want to send it to start that trial? I'd argue no. Keep it hanging over Donald Trump's head. It's what Republicans would do. It's what Mitch McConnell would do immediately.
Definitely.
Yeah, if the roles were
reversed. And roles were reversed, yeah. Mitch McConnell would do this. They'd hang it over a Democrat president's head and just let that ride through the 2020 election. It's a big storm cloud over them the entire time.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's mid-December right now, right? You gain nothing by pushing this along, getting it quickly. We all know how the Senate's going to operate. We don't know the rules. We don't know the fairness. The witnesses are already being talked about not being allowed, all this kind of stuff. Why not wait for time to pass, get into 2020, get into January, get everyone's attention back on. This is the holidays. I don't think people want to sit through, you know, Christmas time watching, you know, a Senate trial that's going to take a day or two and be an informal stamp.
Yep.
Wait till that time. And here's the other thing. There's evidence that's still out there. There's evidence that's still out there that can be used.
Yeah, we have. We're not going to go too far down this rabbit hole today, but certainly in the future, certainly in a future episode, we're going to, where Lev Parnas, one of Rudy Giuliani's associates that got arrested trying to flee the country, apparently has a lot of tea to spill about what's been going on with the Ukraine business.
Yeah.
Devin Nunes, the House Intelligence Committee's ranking member, as being involved in the Ukraine scandal here.
Yep.
This guy's got a lot of stuff to talk about, but this has only just come to light recently and hasn't gotten a chance to be a part of these articles of impeachment. So in my mind, I'm saying, well, why doesn't the House just hold the articles of impeachment? Don't send them to the Senate. Continue and investigate. Bring people like Lev Parnas before you. Get those facts out in front of the American public. If necessary, add additional articles of impeachment.
Yeah, yeah.
And otherwise, if it's nothing, then it's nothing. That's fine.
Right.
I mean, but get to the bottom of it. I don't see the political downside for Democrats. No. They were voted into office, a lot of them, with the mandate to hold this administration accountable.
Yeah. And they have this. They have a great political strategy, too, because that letter that Schumer sent to Mitch McConnell, which I'm sure was worked on with Pelosi and a lot of House Democrats, a lot of people like that, where they named witnesses like Mulvaney, Pompeo,
Bolton,
all the people that really need to speak, named them and just had McConnell shut it down. But now you have that piece to say, hey, look, because the Senate is a trial at the end of the day.
Yeah.
This was voting on the process of impeachment, and now there's a trial. And you could say right now the trial is not fair. Right now we can't call the witnesses we want. We can't have certain facts come out. So we're not going to do that until it is. Now all the pressure is on McConnell and the Senate. And maybe they like it like that, but guess what? It keeps us in the news. Now what happens in the Senate is if this goes next week or whatever, they quickly ram through a sham trial. It's gone. Now guess what? Impeachment's over.
Yeah.
He's acquitted. And it's an old story, and now you can't bring it up again ever again, and that's that.
This whole process, there have been times where I've doubted how this is going to go, whatever. But I have to say, Nancy Pelosi has been running a really tight ship and really, like, has been amazing throughout this whole process. And like, good call on this, y'all. It's like calling this out and bringing this up. Because I remember back before they really started this process, I was just kind of like, what's the point of all this? They're going to impeach. It's going to go to the Senate. It's going to be over. But this changes everything. The fact that they can just say, if we're not getting a fair shake in the Senate, then we're just going to leave this as he was impeached. And you're never going to be able to say that he was acquitted in the Senate.
Yeah.
This is brilliant.
Yeah. And I'm glad it's something that Democrats have figured out. And I agree with what you just said. We have someone that's smart now.
Yeah.
Pelosi, there's things we can criticize about here and there she's done.
Of course.
And that's totally fine. She's not perfect. But she's overall, done a masterful job. And something funny came out today that by the time everyone hears this, they'll see. There's going to be a great meme, because what happened at the end of the vote, when the final was, you know, tally, she did the tally, Democrats started applauding, and she immediately gave a look and did like this, like, don't.
Yeah.
And
makes you look partisan.
Yeah. And she, and that's, it's become, it's going to become a big meme, because you can see it already. But the, her face was so funny. She, it was like kind of this, like,
Cut it out.
Yeah. And you know what? The clapping stopped.
Dude, she's got control like that, not only over the Democrats, but there are a couple moments of the GOP today, too, where they were cheering a couple things and they were jeering other things. And she said, "We will have order." And it was silent. Yeah. So at least that, like, she has the respect, at least.
She's amazing.
Yeah, you can get on her for some of her politics and disagree with her on topics, but that's the whole point of our system.
Kind of wish she was running for president. Let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole. But speaking of running for president, before we get to the end of our episode here, I did want to bring up this news that broke earlier today. You know, we're talking a lot about what happens in 2020. And just to add some additional stakes to it, as if there's not enough already, an appeals court has sent Texas's Affordable Care Act lawsuit back to a lower court. Now, that appeals court agrees that the individual mandate, which is that tax you pay if you don't have health insurance that Republicans overturned recently, they agree it's unconstitutional. But they sent it back to a lower court to examine all this. At the end of the day, what this means is that there's a pretty good chance the Supreme Court does not get an opportunity to strike down Obamacare in 2020. Which means it falls to the next administration.
Yep.
So the 2020 election becomes even more important now. If healthcare is important to you, there's literally only one party right now that is running on expanding healthcare for Americans.
Yeah.
Not only that, there's only one party that is running on a platform of keeping healthcare for Americans.
Yeah. There's only one party that has a plan.
Yeah. The other party is running to abolish healthcare for millions of Americans. And if that's okay with you, then I guess, I don't know what else to tell you, I guess vote for them.
Yeah, and just
one, I hope that's not the case, and I wish you'd talk to me and let's discuss this in detail.
One thing I just want to add here that I remember hearing recently is, you know, there's 20-something million people that have healthcare through ACA, and I heard that there are another approximately 5 million Americans who are eligible for $0 premiums healthcare through the ACA. They would get the full premium. They'd get a voucher for the full premium.
Yeah.
So there's 5 million Americans right now that can get healthcare for free through the ACA that are not getting it. And to me, this comes down solely to the fact that this administration has gutted and cut the funding for the promotion and the advertising of ACA to get people to sign up. So there's the 20 million plus and all that kind of stuff. There's the people that are still uninsured, but there's 5 million people out there right now who could have health insurance that this government basically is saying, we don't want them to know that they can get free health insurance. So we're going to cut the money that reaches out to people, the outreach to get people on, to get people insured. And I think it's just friggin' disgusting.
It is gross. So, 2020 is super important for a number of reasons. If you care about your fellow human beings having health care and not going bankrupt to survive or provide for their families, then you have one party to vote for at this point. All right, so let's talk about some uplifting news to close out our episode then. Got two stories for you all today. Number one, in our backyard here in New Jersey. New Jersey has restored the voting rights to 80,000 people who are on probation or parole. You've heard us multiple times in this pod talking about the restoration of voting rights to felons that have served their time. I 100% support this move. If you are out of jail, you served your time, you paid your debt to society, you deserve your right to vote back. This is a great move. Kudos to you, Governor Murphy of New Jersey.
Awesome.
Number two, this is worldwide news here. Germany has banned across the country gay and transgender conversion therapy treatments.
Okay.
I love this. Huge step in the right direction. There's no proof any of this shit works. There's a lot of proof that it destroys people's lives.
Yeah.
And I wish America would follow suit. We have a number of states that have banned gay, transgender conversion therapies, but far too many still not only allow them, but endorse them. So let's follow in Germany's footsteps on this one, America, and get on the right side of history here. All right. So on that note, Dennis, Jagnish, thank you so much for joining.
No problem, man.
Always great.
It's been a goddamn pleasure, gentlemen. It's been a historic 24 hours. Happy to share it with you both. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to say. Whether or not we are recording over the holidays, we have yet to determine. So if we don't, I want to say have a happy holiday to everyone out there. And I say happy holiday because Pod Media is participating in the war on Christmas.
Yes.
No, but
full on attack.
No, but enjoy whatever holiday you're celebrating. Enjoy it. We hope you're hanging out with your friends and loved ones. And if we don't drop any new episodes before the new year, we'll see you all in 2020.
Yeah.
Cheers.